Fear does not exist in this dojo. Pain does not exist in this dojo. We do not train to be merciful here. This is a place of learning. This is a place of knowledge. For years we've gotten from Karate Kid and Cobra Kai. And now it's time for us to get back.
It'll open up a way for us to talk about all kinds of martial arts movies. There's also like no way to not compare those instantly to Karate Kid.
Man, face you, he is your enemy, and the enemy deserves no mercy. We teach the way of the mic. Welcome to Dojo 9.
On this episode of Dojo 9, join the senseis Dave the Clone, Chris Stiles, and David Paulus.
Thanks, Barry. Thanks for helping me out again.
That's all right, Chuck. That's what sidekicks are for.
I've had talks with him about the daydreams. He's made up this world where he can be,
Chuck Norris.
He says they're sidekicks, but they do things together.
Barry is only a winner in his dreams.
So where's your friend Chucky now, retard?
Now, there's someone I want you and your dad to meet.
But hope is coming his way.
That is your first lesson. You must always be ready. I will help you learn what you want to know. You will work with these an hour each day. If you make a mistake, they will sting you.
Look out!
Start climbing.
Now he has the guts to try to be worthy of his idol.
Hey, Barry, don't listen to them. Listen to me. I'll race you to the top.
I can't.
Who the hell is he talking to?
You can do it, Barry.
Barry, Barry. We always seem to meet this way. It's not gonna be so easy this time. You want a real shot at me? Karate tournament? If you're not too chicken. Why don't you just quit now and avoid the embarrassment?
His hero is about to step out of his fantasies.
I am Chuck Norris.
And fight at his side.
Why don't you and I go win this thing, huh?
A dreamer. A champion. An unbeatable team. Sidekicks.
I love this movie.
Oh my God.
So everybody, I couldn't believe, first of all, I can't believe I'm watching it, but as I'm watching it, like all these realities of modern film and especially comedy and action comedy are just coming together. It's just kind of like, wow, this is a treasure.
Uh-huh. Had you seen it before or no?
No, I didn't even. I had no idea it existed. If I saw it in 1992 when it was current. I don't remember a thing about it.
Oh my God! Well, you're welcome then for
exactly thank you.
Turning you on to one of the greatest cinematic treasures that Chuck Norris ever bestowed upon us.
That's an understatement.
Did you ever think there was a movie with Joe Piscopo doing his best Martin Cove impersonation and does a 360 spin in midair at the end of the movie?
Do me a favor. Don't take the wind out of my sails before you. Are you recording yet?
we're rolling now. Just you know.
Oh, rolling now. Just making sure. Yeah. I mean, let me just break it down to you from my perspective. This movie had it all. It had Joe Piscopo in it. All right. It had a callback to. I mean, the movie almost predates itself because. It's inherently it's like a prophecy. Joe Piscopo is a caricature of himself, like in every movie. You know, the kid has an I can't breathe moment. Think about where we were a year ago. I mean, with respect, it's like, are you kidding me? But think
you
about
went
it.
There.
I did, but you know why? Because it's true and it's fair. And not only that, think about this. By the way, you can edit that out. Think about this. The thing was a giant meme for Chuck Norris.
This is where it came from. This is where it started, right?
God, it's so good. Well, and you know who stole the show? The uncle.
Of course.
Oh, Mako. God. Yeah.
He's incredible. I've seen him in 100 things, but he was incredible. What a treat.
Not to veer too far off the path right out of the gate, but I have to throw a shout out to another Mako movie, the incredible Taking Care of Business, 1991, Jim Belushi.
J.J. Abrams' first screenplay, everybody.
If you haven't seen it, check it out. Jim Belushi, Charles Grodin, and the lovable Mako as Mr. Sakamoto.
Big Sack.
Sack, I told you to lose to him, not win 4 straight sets.
I am out of here also. Nice titty.
That's a really good impersonation.
Oh my god, I love that movie, dude.
Oh, I fucking love that movie. I will rock that VHS so the wheels fall off. We will talk about that again. But, of course, today we're talking about the incredible sidekicks in relation to Cobra Kai.
Oh, yeah.
You gotta throw some love out of the gate. Obviously, you know, Jonathan Brandis, Bo Bridges, Chuck Norris, all those guys, you gotta throw some love to Julia Nixon. The lovable Julia Nixon, who, if you guys are wondering who she is, she's a school teacher who's her uncle, and she was from Rambo 2. She's in a bunch of stuff. She's a legend.
Couldn't believe who I recognized her.
Oh, yeah. She's Take Me With You, Rambo. And then
you're not expendable.
I love it. Every time I watch that movie, it Take Me With You, Rambo. And I'm thinking, like, he's taking you with him in a body bag because you're going to die in, like, 3 seconds.
She's the one that gave him the jade pendant that he wore.
Yeah, that's right. And he gives it to the kid at the end of Rambo 3. I love a man who knows his Rambo continuity. Fuck yeah.
My God.
Out of the gate. First official fuck yeah.
Dr. Paulus here is a long-lost brother of the Hollow Knight Network. He's also the madman behind Best Thanksgiving Ever. So if you have Amazon Prime, go check that shit out. Watch it all year until next Thanksgiving, and we'll have him back to talk about it at that time. But David, welcome to the dojo.
Thank you for having me. Are you kidding me? This is actually an honor to be involved, especially after what you guys sent me before we had this conversation.
We found the one guy in Hollywood who hadn't seen Sidekicks with Jonathan Brandis and Chuck Norris.
You haven't been to Hollywood in a while. You'd be amazed.
Hollywood's locked down. Right? I mean, what's it like?
Now, if you were saying the one guy in Manhattan, I'd be like, yeah, you're right, because people on the East Coast generally are ahead of the game. People out here are still hung up on reality TV and what flavor vape they're buying today.
So here, that's the flavor that's available, whatever they got had. That's all take.
Exactly.
Oh man. Well, Sidekicks from 1992, well after the path had been started by Karate Kid and continued by Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Best of the Best, a couple other movies that all needed to get amalgamated to have Sidekicks be a thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, there's so much Karate Kid in there, and so much of all that stuff, all those movies that we loved of that era. You know, there's a lot of obviously Chuck Norris DNA all over there. Every now and again, I watch this movie and I think, like, you know, it's written or what's directed by Aaron Norris. So I'm
younger
sure
brother
that,
Chuck.
You know, it was always envisioned for Chuck, and that's probably the only reason this movie got made. But I always imagine, like, what if this was like somehow done for someone else? Like, this is like a twisted. There's a little bit of Last Action Hero in there, and this actually predates Last Action Hero. But I was like, kind of thinking, like, what if it was like Van Damme, or what if it was, you know, and it's blasphemy to talk about. We love Chuck Norris, of course. Like not having Dudikoff play the American Ninja.
Jeez, wow.
Yeah, you gotta love Chuck Norris. But every now and again, I think about these things because, as we all know, in the 90s, there was all these things that were famously recast at the last minute and shit like that. Like Demolition Man was supposed to be Seagal and Van Damme.
Thank God it wasn't.
Part of me feels like, yes, thank God it wasn't, because I love
Demolition Man was Stallone, right?
Yes, Stallone and Wesley Snipes. And I love both. I love everything about Demolition Man. But, like, I still wish that Seagal and Van Damme would do a movie together. I know they fucking hate each other, but that's, like, why I want them to do it. Like, make a buddy cop comedy. Like, please take my money. Especially now with them both as, like, 60-year-olds. It'd be incredible.
Has Seagal not participated in The Expendables at all?
Seagal's feuding with the producer, Avi Lerner, or something like that. Or maybe it's Avi Arad. One of the Avis.
Avi Lerner, 100%.
Avi Lerner. But Seagal's like had some beef with him over some like direct-to-video turd they did together like 10 fucking years ago. I don't even remember what the movie was.
You want to hear something special?
Hey. Yeah.
The day you and I had a cigar at that cigar shop in Beverly Hills, Nazareth it's called, before you arrived, I was sitting in there, and I saw Avi Lerner, who I know from working at restaurants for several years back then. I saw Avi Lerner waiting in that sort of courtyard area. There's kind of like there's a centralized area with three different paths to like Cannon Drive and whatever's up there, Brighton Way, and then another, maybe a back parking lot. He's waiting there. Sly walks up, and then what's his name? Ralph Moeller walks up. If you know who Ralph Moeller is, if you don't, rather, Ralph Moeller was the giant German gladiator in Gladiator. He was an awesome character. He was also in movie?
The one who takes
a few
fingers at the end. He's like,
yeah. He's also a Universal Soldier. He's one of those guys there. He's a really, really great guy. I've met him a few times, but Avi Lerner was there meeting with them, and for all we know, that was a meeting about the next Expendables movie at that time.
When we were sitting in there smoking, they walked by, and we were like, holy shit, dude, there's Stallone.
Exactly.
It was a really L.A. trip for me, the L.A. trip.
it was a good one for you.
you get the full treatment.
Yeah, it was so funny, too, because he shows up, we had lunch, and he goes, dude, why'd you wear a sport coat? And I'm like, I don't know, isn't this what you're supposed to do out here, or what?
It's incredible. By the way, not to get off track, and I just want to throw this out there because you mentioned Seagal and Van Damme.
Mm-hmm.
Have you guys seen Jean-Claude Van Johnson?
No, I hear it's amazing, though.
I'm going to tell you right now. If we can agree that Van Damme is a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Oh, yeah.
All it did was solidify his case, revolutionize one more revolution over, one time over, the whole career. He's amazing.
Wow.
You know, that show was only 5 episodes long, and it's pure gold. It's so good.
Oh, man. Van Damme's always had a very special place in my heart, so... anything about like dudes who can pull off the mullets with the spin kicks is like, you know, you're already in first ballot Hall of Famer consideration. And then, you know, the dude did Time Cop, Kickboxer, and Bloodsport. So that's it, you know, right there. You're fucking Hall of Famer.
So real quick, Jean-Claude Van Damme is in the series. He's like an MI6 sort of thing, Special Forces. But his cover is Jean-Claude Van Johnson, who is an actor. So he makes fun of and references Time Cop, Bloodsport, Cyborg, Universal Soldier. Every time you see one of those callbacks, it just makes your mind explode and you laugh out loud because it's so good. I mean,
Universal Soldier is another one that is just absolutely critical, crucial watching for me.
Yeah,
he makes fun of the mullet.
I love it. He had many mullets.
We're in the age where Hollywood has become very self-referential. Whoa, sorry. Oh my God, I'm having a stroke. On the
referential?
Self-referential. Holy shit. Oh my God. And not only self-referential, but like, you know, Easter eggs are not even just a thing for people just for fun anymore. Like, Cobra Kai only works the way it does because of the way they're doing all these Easter eggs. So it's the same, especially with Sidekicks. But when we talk about the Van Damage Report, which we do every once in a while on the Hollow Knight Network, every once in a while, you kind of have to point out all those things that are like, this is a typical Van Damme thing. And for them to have a whole show based on him kind of like doing that himself and like taking that moment on his own is pretty insane.
I love Van Damage as a word. That was like one of my favorite moments of pop culture ever. And they're using it in trailers and shit.
There are all these rumors he's not a martial artist. He's a dancer.
Hit the three.
He's really a dancer. He just follows choreography, and he's like hurt multiple stuntmen on multiple films. All this uncorroborated. These are like the cocktail party stories I've heard about him. Not at any Hollywood cocktail parties, though. These are just, you know, random cocktail parties.
I don't care what anybody says, though. Double Impact.
Oh,
that is,
yeah,
great acting, and that is great action, because I give him credit. He always get, there's always something that happens in Van Damme movies, all right? He fights Bo Leung. He will always
fight him, or
Bolo Yang, and he will always get
amazing.
And he will always get cut in the stomach. I don't know why that is his trick. He always gets cut in the stomach. Because
he can do that pantomime
Let's not forget the obligatory splits moment. He has to do the splits in every movie.
Dancer.
And he has to show his ass. His ass is a heavily featured part in almost every single one of his movies. He'll just flash his ass for a little second just because he thinks he has the world's greatest ass. You can totally tell. It's like Tommy Wiseau in The Room.
Bloodsport. Double Impact, he does a split while showing his ass, right? Or that's in boxer shorts. No, Time Cop.
Yes. Yeah. He's in his underwear, and that's how he stops from getting electrocuted.
But getting back to Sidekicks, you know, this was a movie, I think, I'm pretty sure, actually, first time I watched this, it was like right when I got cable. This was like, you know, maybe like a Saturday afternoon or something, and I'd like seen the trailers for it and stuff. But like then it came on cable and it was like it felt kind of special to me because I had never really like discovered, you know, I hadn't discovered that many new movies on cable yet.
That was where I hung out, dude. Cable was like how I found out half of the cool things in the world. So for me, this was a cable treasure land, this movie.
Yeah, from 93 on, once cable arrived, it changed my life. You know, I could talk for days just about what cable TV did to me. You know, for the all for the better, I hope.
Absolutely.
But you know, there's a lot about this movie that is very 90s, of course. You know, you got Winnie Cooper, of all goddamn things, Danica McKellar from The Wonder Years. First off, I'm going to throw some shade on her character. Not her, the actress, but her character in this movie, because... there's really something that hasn't dated well, right? Like he, you know, she's nice to him. He walks her home. He asks her out. She says, no. Okay, no big deal. But then when he fights the bully, then she says yes. Like, oh, well, I thought you were a fucking pussy before. But like, it just always seemed kind of weird to me. That's like, oh, like he's the exact same dude. But now like he can kind of kick ass a little bit. So.
For everything all being fair and just, he was a fucking pussy, but we got to see the progression of him evolving beyond that. So, you know, for whatever it's worth, that's a version of when they make those kind of choices in a film to like convey that idea. That's where, okay, yeah, we can laugh about it and everything, but that's where it's done well. I give you one other example of something that's done well. And this comparison is to, in my opinion, one of the biggest abominations in cinematic history, which is The Last Jedi. At the end of The Last Jedi, you see a little boy walk up to a broom, and he just kind of just uses the force, and the broom goes in his hand, right? It looks up as a shooting star. Well, the better version of that that doesn't insult my intelligence and slap me on the head for the 2 hours and 20 minutes that transpired before I got to that moment is at the end of Sidekicks, where the kid discovers the magazine and it's a passing of the baton and he's in a wheelchair. I want to see that fucking movie. I don't even need to see that movie because what they did was they gave you hope. And it wasn't gratuitous insulting to my intelligence hope. It was a nice message. And that's what's lost in a lot of modern film today.
But that ties back in. That is one of the many Cobra Kai and Karate Kid connections here. And I'm sorry to cut you off, Dave.
But, no.
You know, first of all, we have a kid that comes in with an inhaler. What happens? The sensei throws out the fucking inhaler. You know, basically, we will see if that's a crutch or a thief. That's Johnny, translate that to Johnny Lawrence language, and that's like, get that pussy bullshit out of here.
Yep.
You know, you're not listening to your guidance counselor, you're listening to me. So the kid no longer has asthma, he no longer is a wimp, he no longer is a nerd. Now he can get girls, now he can win the karate tournament. There's some funny things for a movie that steals a lot from Karate Kid. I don't want to say Cobra Kai steals from it because it totally doesn't, but like there are just some similarities that are hilarious. And Miguel could also be the kid at the wheelchair at the end. So we do kind of get to see it. It's all connected in the karate universe because Johnny Lawrence
is, you know, or Barry is Johnny Lawrence, essentially, if he didn't train with, you know, Kreese, if he trained with Miyagi. Because we know Johnny Lawrence was at one point a nerd.
But they also had to, like, layer on all this extra, like, the asthma. It, you know, like, he was so weak, it was crazy. It was like, Daniel was a victim of his own personality as much as he was a victim of the fact that everybody knew karate way better than he did. In this movie, this kid is like, maybe he was born a month early and spent some time in a bubble. You know, there's definitely a lot of stereotype being thrown to make him as weak as possible. But then Chuck Norris says, don't worry, man, you're going to be okay. And suddenly superhero version of himself comes out of nowhere.
That's so true. It's so true. But I mean, it's, you know, but the other thing about it is it's so funny because how prophetic is it? Look at the kid with the inhaler, right? Look at Barry with his inhaler. I mean, that was a microcosm of what the average kid today is. I mean, when I was in grade school, right, around the time that this movie came out, I was diagnosed with something called shortness of breath. Now, by today's standards, I would take that very seriously. But now being 41, going on 42 years old, I look back at it and I say, it wasn't shortness of breath. It was called being a spoiled tub of shit who liked video games and had nothing to do with sports. And so, like, when I embraced the fact that I'm just, you know, huffing and puffing because I'm actually working my body when I was doing athletic things later on in life, the shortness of breath thing kind of went away. I had an inhaler. I thought it was cool. But other than that, it's like it's kind of like, yeah, probably overplayed, but it kind of speaks to a modern generation in a way.
Yeah, that was definitely a kind of one of those, like, we're going to make this kind of hip and now. The dad's a software programmer. The kid's on asthma. Like, you know,
kid's on asthma.
He's got
a software programmer from Pittsburgh. Talk about an oxymoron.
Silicon Valley was still far away.
Yeah, exactly. You could have said software programmer from Connecticut or from fucking New Hampshire, but no, they went to Pittsburgh. They went to this city of steel.
Detroit Rock City, man. We're going to start programming.
Exactly.
Pittsburgh, where all the Seattle startups also did business.
Exactly.
It was the Seattle before it was Seattle.
That's incredible, man.
I don't know. I felt like the dad was another one where it was laid on so thick, you know.
The single parent factor, yeah.
The single parent factor, and like they're eating in the Chinese restaurant, and a gang just comes in and starts harassing him, right?
Oh, my God. It was so funny.
The guy from Son-in-Law.
I'm just like, yeah, right? Yeah, someone awfully big must have been driving a Haas.
Grubs better.
And I'm like, dude, this guy has, like, there's no dignity left. He's got nothing. In front of the only girl who's probably just like the girl at school talking to his kid, it's all out of sympathy. She's all just like, oh, God, what a fucking loser this guy is. He needs at least one vagina to talk to him in his life. And then, like, her dad has to, or her uncle has to come out and, like, save his ass. Like, you're not safe even out eating dinner. And that makes me, again, the way I feel when I watch Cobra Kai, I want to learn karate.
Always. By the way, the actor's name is Dennis Berkeley, who was in Son-in-Law and a bunch of other things.
Is he still with us?
Or is he fucking passed away? Hope to God. I saw him. He showed up in a Paulie Shore movie. Motherfucker, he died in 2013.
Damn it.
Rest in peace, Dennis Berkeley.
I felt like,
dude, you know what else he was in? He was in Suburban Commando, I believe the name of the movie is, with Hulk Hogan.
Yes, I think that is correct.
And it's one of the funniest lines. It's one of the funniest lines in the movie. Hogan gets in his face and his buddy's face. There's two guys. I don't know if they were. They were both like biker looking guys.
I remember the line now. Yeah.
And Hogan gets in his face and he's like, "What are you gonna do? Kick my ass?" And the guy goes, "Kick your ass? What, are you serious? This is the '90s. We're gonna see you."
Yeah. Talk about a '90s line.
Here's another one that you may not have, it might have gone under the radar, but guess who else one of those guys were in the Chinese restaurant? He's a Baldwin. I don't remember his first name, but he was in The Patriot, and he was also Animal Mother in Full Metal Jacket.
Oh, Adam Baldwin.
Man, I would have never caught that.
Dude, I caught that right away. I never forget a face.
He's Jane in Firefly.
Exactly.
If he's Animal Mother from Full Metal Jacket, that's not a problem.
And one more quick one before, I just in case we don't circle back to it. Do you guys know who the gym teacher was?
Oh, so familiar.
It's Bull Shannon from Night Court.
I thought so. Yes, there is, yes, some fucking kind of underneath some B-level star power in this movie. There's some big dick casting energy going on here.
Mm-hmm. When you could have big dick casting.
Well, you know and else you know in what? It?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Before we go too far away from that, the cable aspect of this, you know, like the fact that it was such a big cable movie, and it used to feel like that was like our portal into the giant shared universe that used to just be all movies. Before, like, different, you know, storylines had their own encapsulated universes, I used to just see Hollywood as a giant movie universe. And so you would be flipping channels and see these people like on Night Court reruns, and then, oh my God, here he is in Sidekicks. And it just felt like that was this playground that a whole bunch of special people get to play in, and none of us will ever get to play in it. And now here we are all the years down the road going, I kind of miss it that way. I don't know. There's something about that was genuine that I missed. But now we're just kind of look back. It's like, oh, yeah, Night Court guy. But it doesn't have that same community feel, you know? I don't know if I might be the only one on this island, but I just thought I'd throw that out there.
No, totally, man. I mean, that's so funny. I mean, obviously, in Night Court, he was a bit more subtle and had a soft side. And that's what made it funny, is because you expect him to be the biggest hard ass in history. And he's actually kind of a dork and actually a really sweet guy. But in this, the beauty about what they did in movies like that is, okay, they take him and they demonstrate that he is a prick. He's an unrelenting prick. But then at the end, when he fights the kid, like towards the middle, or maybe three-fourths to the end of the movie, you know, he gives the kid a wink and he says, not bad. You kind of like, he wins you over, you know?
Yeah. That is actually one of the nicer, somewhat more original moments. And like believable, because you've seen him, like, you know, throughout the movie, like, all right, yeah, I buy it. He would probably say that. He would probably say, not bad, kid. But this movie also has Garrett Graham, who's been in a million things, and he's like the co-teacher, who's just basically, he's there just to have one line of like, hopeless. The kid's hopeless. You know, just, he was so good at being like that adult that shits on children. He was also in Child's Play 2, I believe. How's It Hanging, Phil? He was in that fucking Child's Play 2 and Phantom of the Paradise, of course. That's his but he's in Used Cars, Terror Vision, a bunch of stuff. But good casting energy in this movie. And it all hinges on let's face it, Joe Piscopo.
Oh my God. I said earlier to Chris, this was like his Simple Jack of karate movies. And he was swinging for the fences, man. Like, I honestly think maybe he deserves some, like, award-level recognition for this, because there are moments in this where I was like, you know what? He was going for it, and I want to give it to him. He got it. He got there.
He went for it. I'll give him that. You know, I love Joe Piscopo, so, you know, I don't have to give him shit. He's probably sitting in a fucking, you know, $10 million house wiping his ass with 50s. I'm sure Joe Piscopo is doing fine. But
we hope.
Yeah, he deserves to be. He's a legend. And, you know, this movie is part of the reason for that. His performance is so all over the place, where some of the times I honestly have to wonder if, like, they even gave him lines, or if he just said, like, these are so bad, I'm going to make up my own as I go. I think that might be what happened. And, you know, maybe they just went with take one on everything. I don't say to be insulting or anything like that, but little moments like, hey, man, I wasn't ready. Like, I wasn't ready.
That was awesome.
Really?
Like, I think that was hilarious.
Like a typewriter or like an Apple IIgs or whatever the fuck back in the day. I got an early Mac and typed that out. I don't know.
I will say, amazing. He has one. This one perfect moment for me is when he gets kicked in the stomach, right? And he's kind of like, while he's facing him, Chuck Norris, he's just like, yeah, that didn't hurt. That didn't hurt. And he turns around just the camera, and he has this huge, like, I'm going to puke. Like, he expands his cheeks real quick. And I was just like, dude, you know, he was on Saturday Night Live. That was, like, one of the first plots where almost everybody else saw him. For me, this was one of my big things as a kid was Sidekicks. That's, he actually has a place, not at the same height as Kreese and Martin Cove from Karate Kid, but, you know, him saying, breaking, we choose breaking. That has stayed with me since I was a little kid as some shit like, you might have to break something someday to prove yourself. Be ready. They may choose breaking.
The tiebreaker will be between Barry Grabruski and Randy Cellini. And the event will be breaking. We choose breaking.
Yeah. You know how to do this stuff, Barry?
Yeah, yeah, kind of. I've done it once.
You can do it again.
We're with you, Barry.
I'm not gonna lie. I was a bit taken aback that it wasn't a fight, a sparring session or whatever. I was like, don't you kind of want to see the hero kick his ass at the end? But the best part is, how about this? Not just did the kid have to win it on breaking all those 9 bricks, Uncle comes over and douses it in flames to make it more theatrical. And all I can think of is the practical, you know, a devil's advocate side of me is like, okay, what happens after he breaks the bricks and the canvas is on fire? That's incredible.
I remember there was a debate in school about, did somehow him lighting those bricks on fire make it easier for him to break so that he would automatically win? Because, you know, that other kid couldn't do it. You know, he was like, give me another. And then he just fucked up. You know, he's just like, oh, man. And even Piscopo was like, it's broken. I see it. It's like, we all see the edge is broken, but they want you to break the motherfucker in half. All right.
He took a beautiful dive and turned it into the triple Lindy.
I'll tell you what, that same debate was going on in my school. I feel like that debate must have been just one of the great 90s debates for people in grade school or whatever, you know, close to it. Like, that's up there with the Super Nintendo versus Sega Genesis debate of the 90s.
Oh, my God.
Which we won't weigh in on because, you know.
I literally really played good, both of them. I literally played both of them over Christmas.
This past Christmas?
This past Christmas, whenever I go to Detroit to spend Christmas with my family, I still have a vintage Nintendo NES. I have a Genesis and a Super Nintendo. And then I have a real big conundrum. I used to have a device called the Power Base Converter that you put over the Genesis and you could play original Sega games. I've got no less than 12 original Sega games, including Double Dragon, Shinobi, and Ghostbusters, just to name a few.
Nice.
My mom gave away the Power Base Converter when she moved houses. I have not been able to play those games for at least 15 years.
Damn! You can still get the Power Base Converter online. I know, because it's one of my favorite pieces of video game technology of all time. Because when my brother got a Genesis, we got the Power Base Converter to go with it. And it was like, you know, it was like $30 or something at the time. And it's basically a whole nother Sega Master System that just like attaches to your Genesis.
It totally is, and
it was completely backwards compatible. The controllers had the same ports. You could use old controllers or new controllers. It was so fucking ahead of its time in terms of like how well that like launch was. We've totally sidetracked here. To tie it in, I will say that I think there was a missed opportunity here. They could have done the ultimate Chuck Norris video game, Sidekicks. You know, fucking could have been a Super Nintendo. There were Chuck Norris games, I'm convinced, for sure. But I don't think any of them were, like, you know, big, like those, you know, like Mortal Kombat big or Street Fighter big or even, like, Turtles in Time big or anything like that.
Yeah.
Turtles in Time.
Crazy.
Which is funny. Turtles in Time, the video game is great. The movie fucking sucks ass.
Oh, it's terrible. It's terrible. Yeah. But the game itself is, like, a snapshot the same way this movie is. In fact, this movie reminded me of that because, you know, when, you know, Mako goes up to break the bricks and they're like, hey, you don't have a gi on. I'm like, this is almost like the video game where your character just shows up in their costume. It's, no matter what level they're on, if it's breaking, he's showing up in the apron with the fedora hat and the sweater. Fuck your gi. This is the uncle. This is what his character is. But maybe that's something you'd have to unlock after you beat the whole game. You know, now you can.
Hey, you know what it was a callback to as well? It was a callback to Mr. Miyagi basically saying that belts are for holding pants up.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Exactly.
Yeah,
it's a little wow, man. It's almost like you understand what we're trying to do with the podcast, dude. That's bad.
I understand what you're trying to do with the podcast. I was brief. And I watched the movie to make sure.
Dude, that was awesome. Guess.
I mean,
you've been listening to the Hollow Nine Network, bringing you the very best in fan-made media. That's the word hollow, the number 9, INE. Now broadcasting from our new home on the web, Hollow9.com, where you can find info on all of our awesome programming as well as the team behind the shows. Leave us your feedback, join in the conversation, and be a part of the action. Find the Hollow Nine Network on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. Rate and review us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you find your podcasts. Email us at info@hollow9.com or at hollow9podcast@gmail.com. Join in the fun. Hollow Nine.
The New Jersey HorrorCon reputation is exploding. The atmosphere you guys have created. New Jersey HorrorCon was my entree into an actual horror convention.
Wow.
And you guys are doing a great job.
That is amazing. I'm super proud and super inspired to hear that. I mean, that's a testament to the community of cons and, you know, of horror and stuff in general.
My God.
Oh, my God.
Oh, it's wow. Carmen Electra.
Hey.
Wow, we are all nice giving high fives to an absolute icon.
This is incredible.
Trailblazer, amazing. You are amazing. Carmen Electra,
absolutely.
Be well. Safe. Thank you so much.
Love.
Have a good one. Be well.
So
you can't see it on radio, but she's still
God.
Got it.
Oh, my God, yes.
That's
absolutely.
My wife right
still
there.
Got
my wife gets the picture of Carmen Electra.
The wife does it. There you go, wife. Good job, wife. So that's cool. A keeper. That wife's a keeper.
Are you having a blast?
I am having a blast. Are you having a blast?
I am.
This place is awesome, right?
What's your most favorite part of the whole day so far?
When the guy dressed like Gene Simmons from Kiss stopped in front of our booth and we put Strutter on and he did a lip sync to the whole thing.
Guys, if you haven't subscribed yet, go ahead and do that.
Yesterday I bumped into Michael Winslow. I got to have this whole experience where Leslie Easterbrook was lost and looking for her autograph table and I got to take her all around me.
It's spooky, actually. I'm going to turn the chair around a little bit
sure.
So I can see you.
Oh, all right.
Keep an eye on you. I saw you and I thought, this guy knows everything.
Oh.
Terrific.
Oh, really?
And
oh.
Sound in here with
cool.
You.
Thank
yeah.
you. Thank you. Yeah, it's
really
amazing
clear.
How it... Damon Della Greca of Slasher, this awesome app.
I wanted to do something that would really make it for these people who just love to create, who love horror.
Thank you for what you're doing, dude. It's
Thank
great
you.
That you put this together.
Absolutely, man. It's always good to see you.
We're trying to have as much fun, and we want people to have fun with us, and that's why we got guys like you stop by the table, hang out. We got to do the radio thing for a little bit.
He's from Jersey, I'm from the South, so.
And I'm from the Bronx, so.
So we're all still
okay.
friends. That's good.
So we're
that's
all good.
Good.
Daniel Frankenstein. I'm representing psychothematicmedia.com. Call ourselves a creative collective.
My name is Gail Bykowitz.
Yeah, I'm Hector Della Rosa. We're partners in crime here. We're doing special effects makeup, and we're also independent filmmakers.
When I ran into them earlier, they were definitely vampire cowboys.
I love Better Off Dead. I love Villains Heads. And I'm just so glad that you guys remember those films.
Oh my God. Those movies, I would go to school and just try and talk like Bill and Ted all day.
Those
like,
triumphant channels.
I want my $2, man.
Right?
I've walked around wanting those $2 for how many years now?
This is fantastic. Oh. But of course,
we need some language lessons.
David Clone from the Hollow Nine Network, and by now you know what it's time for you to do. Let's go on over to NewJerseyHorrorCon.com, get yourself some tickets, and check out this awesome event where we are lifetime sponsors. We will be there from now until infinitum with all these incredible guests that are going to be at the next one, bringing you all the awesome from the show floor right to your digital door, right here at Hollow9.com at the New Jersey HorrorCon and Film Festival.
I got it.
That's good. See you soon.
I don't know if you think making me repeat myself is going to somehow make the story change, or if you just don't want to hear what it is I actually have to say, but again, we changed course based on orders received on the flash band from company headquarters. Code Gold, command eyes only. Standard operating procedure, as I know you are aware. Search and rescue would rarely venture into an unregulated area without more concrete proof of life. We sure found something out there already.
When you watch it as a little kid, you know, it's a monster movie, it's creepy, but then there's all the weird artificial intelligence stuff, there's the, like, rapey nature of the facehuggers and all that.
Why don't you stick your face in the egg, dude? Is there an egg opening in front of you? Just stick your face in there and see what happens.
When I fall asleep at night, I have this irrational fear that something is going to crawl inside and, like, lay eggs inside of me. I'm actually wondering, now that we're talking about this, if this might have been the impetus for that.
You know, Star Wars comes out, and they go, what other movies do we have set in space? Boom, Alien gets green light the next day.
Very similar to just even how our government is in preparation for something where they didn't know exactly what was in store, like specifically xenomorphs.
Bodily fluids, and it's not just blood. There's a lot of, like, grease, and there's a lot of sweat. And if it wasn't the blood that got me, it was the sheer amount of sweat.
We're on a mission to bring back knowledge of the xenomorph. The end of all mankind, all wrapped up in a bow, just waiting for us to come along. You're gonna find yourself staring down the barrel of a living, breathing devil in the flesh that bleeds acid and lives to kill us.